What does it mean to be free? Sometimes it means two wheels and an open road. This episode is a love song to and a celebration of the bicycle. From a dead-end American suburb to a trail in Quebec to a train station in Amsterdam. This is a story about how a few spinning gears can change the world. Die Hard This, everybody. I'm Ben Lord. Let's talk about what we love. I grew up in one of the least bicycle-friendly places on Earth, an American suburb. We kids all learned to ride bikes in our driveways. But once we learned to ride, there was no place for us to go. If we were feeling adventurous, we'd steer them across each other's lawns, and that was all. Our road was narrow and curving, and people drove fast there, and there were no bike lanes because, who had ever heard of those? In the movies like E.T. or The Goonies, kids pedaled all around town, saving the world and their alien friends, but our reality was light years away. Going anywhere, anywhere other than the house next door, required a car. Now, this wasn't true for everybody. Some kids who grew up in a quiet cul-de-sac might be able to ride to a few dozen houses. But the main road of our town was a strip of parking lots that extended for miles with an automobile gutter right down the middle. And the side streets that connected the cul-de-sacs with it were busy and winding. Riding a bike to actually go somewhere was foolhardy. And so, to us, despite whatever 1980s nostalgia might suggest, a bicycle was nothing more than a toy. In college, I lived in a compact village on the main coast and had no car. You might expect that my bike would be my new best friend, but the squealing brake mountain bike that I had was a 40-pound monster that I could barely huff up the hills. And during the seasonal tourist glut, riding a bike still felt dangerous. One of my best friends was thrown from his bike in a bad accident in the very first few weeks of our freshman year. I remember going to see him in the hospital, feeling very grateful that he was alive. But mostly, I just didn't see myself as a biker. I didn't know how to ride very well. I didn't really know how my bike worked. I was more of a walker. So I walked. And then for most of my adult life, I barely touched a bicycle. This was America, and as a European friend once observed, you can't America without a car. In the rural towns where I lived, even getting somewhere by car was a haul. The closest destinations, including work and groceries and the banks and restaurants, were all 30-minute car commutes that made some of our suburban friends roll their eyes at how long they were. In America, a bicycle isn't transportation. It's a hobby. It's for people who care about things like VO2 max and titanium alloys. But it is not that way everywhere. In 2021, I assigned my 9th grade earth science students a research project. Investigate a climate sustainability success story. Some way that people have measurably reduced the amount of atmospheric carbon that would otherwise be added to the atmosphere. Their job was to analyze its effects and report what they'd found. And since it would be handy for students to have an example, I set out to do the project myself, completely unaware that it would make me fall in love. The topic I chose was bicycle infrastructure in the Netherlands. Admittedly, it was kind of random. I mean, there was this brief layover in Amsterdam many years ago where I'd been dumbstruck by the thousands of bicycles piled up at the train station. American that I was, it looked to me like some kind of bicycle junkyard, and I wondered why it had been placed there. It wasn't until hours later that I realized that that pile of bikes was the train station's parking garage. Perhaps that distant memory guided my hand as I was choosing a topic for this project. But it wasn't like a sacred calling or anything. I'd planned to grab a few sources, whip up a few slides, and be done. Instead, I dove headfirst down the research rabbit hole, and holy cow! The Dutch have built the most inspiring culture of bicycles. They commute to work on them. They get their groceries on them. Kids go to school on them. They go to restaurants on them. Bike shares are integrated into the train system. Mind-blowingly to me, Dutch bike lanes are so safe that people don't even wear helmets. Lots of roads basically don't allow car traffic, just pedestrians, and bikes. At intersections, bikes get their own lights. Nationwide, about a third of all trips in the entire country are made on bikes. In some cities, the number is closer to a half. This might be old news to people who are more worldly than me, but I was astonished. I was temporarily obsessed with watching videos of Amsterdam city streets. How could it be that this was a city? Everything was so quiet and clean, so unlike the dirty, loud city streets of American cities where cyclists could scarcely be seen. It was a revelation to me. I read that most Dutch didn't even think of themselves as cyclists. They just thought of themselves as people who wanted to go somewhere. Imagine what the world would be like if we followed their example. I presented my findings to my class with enthusiasm, and long after the kids' reports were graded and returned, I kept thinking about it. I dreamt of what my town might look like with a beautiful Dutch-style bicycle corridor along the brook. And I dreamed of what it would be like to explore the world on two wheels of my own. And so, for the first time in my life, I began to think of my bike as something more than just a toy. Not long after, I set out on a bike adventure with my family. Our kids were 13 and 9. We packed up our tents, tuned up our bikes, and cycled 200 kilometers through the Laurentians in Quebec, camping along the way. And I fell totally, madly, maniacally in love. It is hard to describe how I felt sitting on that awkwardly packed bicycle. It was like the last day of middle school. I felt like I could go anywhere, at any pace I wanted, and under my own power, dependent on no one. It was freedom. It was euphoric. And it was utterly different from the burden I felt on the day when I got my driver's license. That day, all I felt was the awesome weight of responsibility. Sitting behind the wheel of a 1.5-ton machine that could kill a dog or a child that ran out into the road, one that with every mile heated the Earth's atmosphere. Yes, that car brought me freedom, but at a staggering cost to people and the planet. Driving felt necessary, but not really free. By contrast, putting my feet on the pedals on that first long bike trip felt like the perfect balance of freedom and goodwill. And I wanted to go everywhere. But here's the thing. I didn't. Because back at home, cycling wasn't any easier. It was still inconvenient and uncomfortable and dangerous as it had ever been. But why? Why does it have to be that way? The answer is, of course, because we made it that way. Maybe not on purpose, but we did. We tend to think of bikes as we think of cars, as machines. But cycling, like driving, isn't really about the machine. It's a system. The bicycle is only one component of that system. Yes, it is the most elegant transportation machine ever developed by human ingenuity. I mean, no train or bus or boat can ever come close to its efficiency. Up to 99% of the energy delivered by the rider transmits to the wheels. Traveling on a bicycle at 10 to 15 miles per hour is the most energy-efficient means of human transport, period. But a bicycle is nothing without a second component of the system, a human rider. Cycling isn't instinctual. It requires skill, and you have to learn how to do it. And that's not all. A rider is no use for a bike if there is no place to ride it. Bikes are useless without roads or trails. And it is this third component of the system where the system breaks down. I still live in a place where cyclists are second-class travelers. This is implicit in the very shape of the roads. My country was made for cars and for the comfort and convenience of their drivers. Cyclists might be allowed on roads, But everyone knows that that is a technicality. When I have cycled on a city and suburban street, as the law prescribes, drivers invariably shout at me and lay in their horns. In North America, people have had to fight for years just to designate a few miles of rail trail, and they have to fight 10 times harder than that for anything like protected bike lanes in actual streets. If a cyclist wants to practically get somewhere, like a workplace or a grocery, well, it better not inconvenience drivers even one bit. Under that kind of pressure, most plans for beautiful, dedicated bike lanes in America become plans to put a bit of paint on a busy road, which, of course, makes a cyclist no safer at all. Yet, strangely, when a city or a town actually does build quality bike infrastructure, it brings vibrancy to even the shabbiest town. That town overnight becomes a destination, a place that people want to go. And when someone like me feels that intoxicating sense of freedom that we can truly go where we want in this world without doing undue harm to our fellow mortals, it is because we have invested in all three parts of that system. That kind of investment only happens because people work for it. Every safe bikeway everywhere was gained against bureaucratic headwinds and long entrenched habits, even in the Netherlands, which in the 1970s was slumping into Carcentrum just like every place else in the developed world. If Amsterdam is the city of cycling today, it is because a movement of ordinary people began to demand change. Appalled by the number of children on bikes who were killed by motorists, it was a movement that literally transformed the face of that country. If today, Dutch transportation infrastructure is a model for the world, it is because of those activists. It is because the people mustered the political will to make the streets safe. And it is because clever engineers solved problems intersection by intersection. And it is because, as a country, the Dutch decided to care. And the rest of us can too. So here's some homework for you. Sometime this summer, get on a bike. Find one that feels a little bit like flying. Take it to a place that is safe and pleasant to ride, and then put your feet on the pedals and feel how that slightest little push with your toes can send you whizzing down the trail. Feel how the slightest lean can change your course and how your body just knows how to do it with hardly any thought at all. Feel things. You are not in a hermetically sealed bubble behind a window or a windshield. You are in the world. You can hear the sounds and feel the sun on your face and the breeze on your skin, and you can feel your freedom like a physical sense, because you can decide where you want to go and how fast and how far, and you can stop as often as you like. There are no rails or ruts for you. And then think of the elegance of the bike, how a few sprockets and fenders is all it takes to see the world. And finally, think of all the people in this system who made this freedom possible. The ones who built the bike you get to ride. The ones who make the trails and roads you get to ride on. And then reach back into your memories. Back to that day when some trusted friend held your seat and ran along beside you. Back to when they let go, even without you knowing it, and shouted behind you that you were on your own, taking your first tentative pedals toward an independent life. And then take a moment to thank them for that gift. If you love the feeling of freedom on a bike, don't just keep it to yourself. Share this episode with someone. Talk to your town council, join a local group pushing for safer bike lanes, because every safe street starts with someone who cared enough to say, well, why not here? iHeartThis is written, edited, and produced by me, Ben Lord. Our logo was designed by Bryony Morrow Cribbs. Our website is iheartthispodcast.com. You can email us at ben@iheartthispodcast.com. Thank you so much for listening. And as always, be kind, be curious, and be thankful.